Chronicles chapter 20, one of the kings of Judah named Jehoshaphat is faced with, as he has sent out his spies, his scouts, and sees a vast army that is beyond number. It just looks like a white field with all the tents that are spread out in the valley over. He knows this conglomerate of nations, or several nations that have banded together to attack Judah, where he is king, is just imminently going to be there to wipe him out and everybody there. But the next morning he gets up and talks about how great God is, and he gets some of his singers, they must have been pretty brave little musicians, to go out there and lead the army in praise as they crest the hill. And as they had crested that hill, they found out that God, out of their worship, had worked already a great victory and caused these armies to turn on one another, just made them mad in their thinking, and they had already been destroyed. And it says they crested the hill and saw nothing but bodies laying there strewn in the valley. I like what is said in 1 Chronicles 16:29. It says, ascribe to the Lord. In Psalm 29, you see a similar thought. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Other passages say, worship him, the Lord, in the splendor of his holiness. Psalm 95:6 says, come, let us bow down in worship and let us kneel before the Lord our God, our Maker. 96, next door in verse 9 says, worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness and tremble before him, O you earth. You know that Jesus, as he was interacting with Satan and talking about this priority that he had of worship, he said, away from me, Satan, in Matthew chapter 4, verse 10, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. And many others. Hezekiah, after an angel had come down and wiped out the entire Assyrian army, and Sennacherib had already gone back to Nineveh, the home capital, and sent word, it says, to Israel and Judah, and letters to Ephraim and Manasseh, inviting them to come to the temple of the Lord, it says, in Jerusalem, and celebrate the Passover of the God of Israel, and just created a great time of worship and celebration. So again, whether we find worship in the midst of a great crisis, where there's pressure and a wonder at the moment of how are we ever going to make it through this, or whether it's in a time of great celebration at one of the traditional feast times, or even as they are celebrating a great victory that God has made, worship is a high priority. And as you turn over to the book of Zechariah, it's interesting that you find in the first six chapters of Zechariah several little visions, you might say, that were given, and those visions were instructive. They talk about God's work and what he's going to do, some of the judgment that he's going to bring, some of the blessing that he's going to bring also. And then in the back half of the book, there's a lot more instruction about what God is yet going to do in some of the later chapters of Zechariah, and how he's going to come and set up his kingdom on earth one day. We don't know exactly the timing of that and what the dates are for that. Only God knows those dates. But there's going to be a great unfolding of God's power as he comes, it says in Revelation chapter 20, riding on a white horse and with angels with and saints with that have gone to be with him. And he's going to come and swoop down at the end of what the Bible talks about as a seven-year period of judgment, known as the tribulation period, the 70th week of Daniel, and swoop in and save the day, protect those believers, Jewish believers especially, who have been trusting in him over the previous 7 years and are huddled together and threatened of their very lives. And he comes back as the conquering Messiah to that battle of Armageddon and wins that battle easily. It says, with the slays his enemies with the sword out of his mouth, with his word, and then sets up his rule and reign for 1,000 years. That's talked about later in Zechariah. But in the meantime, there is this connecting point in the book of Zechariah as we have been looking at some of the priorities and asking ourselves the question, okay, what do we do and what should we be including in our lives when times are tough, stressful, and even when there's a time of blessing? But sometimes as we look around, we should notice that there are just as many, if not more, blessings than there are trials. I think that is always true because of how good God is. But sometimes we can get kind of mired down in the trials, in the loss of life, in the what is God doing type of questions. And all of these 12 minor prophets were written during some time of trial, even when people had messed up, brought a bunch of judgment upon themselves. Other times they hadn't done anything, and this was an unfolding of God's plan. But it was mostly because of judgment, and the crisis was right there on top of them. The enemy was coming in, and what do we do during those times when we have this great hardship upon us? And one of them that is suggested out of the book of Zechariah is to worship the Lord. Just like these other passages that we read, that one option and the most important option that we should never forget, no matter how hard times are, is to worship the Lord, like the passage says, in the beauty of His holiness, and remember who God is. And I trust we can kind of get spurred on in that direction this morning. So if you're looking for Zechariah, you might be able to easily find Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's just two books back to the left. There's that book of Malachi, and then Zechariah has 14 chapters, and we're in chapter 7 this morning. But we are suggesting that to be useful to God, we need to involve ourselves in wholehearted worship. Now, I don't know if you have got that yet in your Christian life, but if you want to be fully useful for God, fully available for God, fully used by Him in whatever manner, worship is a very important component of your spiritual life and walk. And it's suggesting on the other side of that same proposition that if we say, I'm going to leave the worship of God out of my life, then you will not be of much value and use by God. So the encouragement is to think about how we can get caught up in this and how we can enjoy this. What do we need to do to prepare our hearts for it? Now, just like in our day, as was happening there, as you can see in those first three verses that we're going to read, that Zechariah found that there was not a whole lot of worship, of true, genuine worship going on. And as you look around the various countries and cultures of this world, there's not, and here in the United States as well, and in local churches, even Bible-believing churches, there certainly is a void of wholehearted, sincere worship from a pure heart. So we want to get on that a little bit. In the fourth year, it says in Zechariah 7 of King Darius, the word of the Lord came to Zechariah on the fourth day of the ninth month, which is Kislev. Now the town of Bethel had sent Sharezer and Regim Malek and other men to seek the favor of the Lord. And speaking to the priest who belonged to the house of the Lord of hosts and to the prophets, saying, now here's the question, shall I weep in the fifth month and abstain as I have done all these many years? And when the word of the Lord, and then the word of the Lord of hosts came to me, this is Zechariah, saying, say to all the people of the land and to the priests, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth and in the seventh month, these 70 years, was it actually for me that you fasted? Now, the question is being asked as if they knew the answer. And this book is coming at a very strategic time. You remember that just like Malachi last week, we were talking about these books written by Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. These three men spoke to the nation of Israel after they returned to the land after the approximate 70 years of captivity and prior to what they did not know was coming of 400 plus silent years before Jesus Christ, the next major spiritual figure to come on the scene, was going to be ushered into the world as a baby through Mary and be under Mary and Joseph's care and then launch into that ministry. Excuse me. But God is revealing, and we must let God, if we're going to worship and be useful to Him, and worshiping ones, people who are ascribing worth to God, people who are talking about the Lord, people who are honoring the Lord, those are the ones whom God uses. But we also, like we have here in this passage, we must let God, like we see in these first passages, reveal what He is looking into in our hearts. That is, if we're going to engage in wholehearted worship, we must let God reveal what He's really looking for in our hearts. And He is saying, as I look into the hearts of the people here in this setting, I'm not finding what I'm looking for. The question had come, shall we keep these extra fasts? Now, these are extra fasts and times of worship that had been instituted that were not prescribed in the law. These are ones like that one in the fifth month that's mentioned at the burning of the temple when Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians had come in and many years ago, 70 years ago, and had conquered Jerusalem and had burned everything in the city of Jerusalem, including looting and tearing down the temple, throwing all the walls down, tearing everything down. And then there was also another fast that was created for a man by the name of Gedaliah. He's mentioned in 2 Kings 25. Verse 25, actually, as he was the last Jewish governor of Judah, of that area, who was assassinated, and they had a time of fasting and mourning for him. But these are the things that they are remembering, but God is challenging them with that question that came at the end there. Say to them, when you have fasted and mourned, and he's talking about these previous, on the fifth of the month, for these 70 years, as you've been away in captivity, have you actually been doing it for me? And the answer from his perspective is, you have not been worshiping me. You have been, in other words, just going through the motions. And you have been making yourself look good, but you haven't been what you might call perfecting your piety or growing in the Lord. Now we think to ourselves about these other acts of worship and statements of worship that we saw on the page before us, like with Josiah in 2 Chronicles chapter 20. He's giving them some time of instruction when Hezekiah called the worship time, and he was also speaking and used Isaiah to teach the people a lot of things about the Lord. In other words, there was a resurgence of teaching, and then there was a resurgence of worship. There was a getting of truth into people's minds, and then there was a following through of that truth of honoring the Lord. And so these folks had been away in captivity for 70 years, but they hadn't been like the Daniels, like the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's. They had not been honoring the Lord and getting God's spiritual truth, even though they had opportunity, even while they were captives in Babylon, they hadn't been taking opportunity to get God's truth into their minds. They've just been, whatever they've been doing, in complaint mode or going through the motions or kind of acting like Christians, kind of maintaining their national Jewish identity, but they had not been growing spiritually as they needed to. And that's what God is saying here, that you have been doing all this fasting, but the question is, have you been doing it for me? Have you been looking to me? Have you been calling out to me? Have you been worshiping me? Have you been singing, ascribe to the Lord, Almighty Ones? Have you been singing, worship the Lord in the beauty? Have you been singing those psalms that usher people into worship? Have you been looking forward to getting back to the days when the temple would be rebuilt? And the answer is no, there's been a pathetic dearth of spiritual lethargy. So I don't know where you are right now in your spiritual life and walk. If you were to look inside and say over the last year or several months, you know, has my spiritual growth, is it represented on the scale of 1 to 10 and in the 5 to 10 range, and I'm pressing on, I'm trying to get to know God better, Or has it been something that's in the 0 to 5 range or 4 range where I've just been kind of letting things slide? I've been allowing the pressures to just kind of wash up on the shore of my life, and I allow the pressures of life and the depressions and the hurts and all those things to just drive me more introverted within myself, so I think about how hard it is as opposed to how great God is. Now, if you keep your finger there in Zechariah and flip back to Isaiah chapter 40. This is another one of those times. We don't have maybe the time to read all of this, but God is saying, man, there's something you need to know. Isaiah is talking at a time when the Babylonians are coming in. In chapter 40, he starts talking to them about there's going to still be a time of restoration, which we're talking about now after, where people have a chance to come back to the land and where God is going to be working again. But that's going to come as we start focusing on who God is. And if you glance down, for instance, to verse 21, it says, "Did you not know? Have you not heard?" In Isaiah 40, verse 21, "Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth that it is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers who stretches out he's the one who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in," just as easily as you would pull a cord or go like that to a set of draperies and let the sun shine in, so to speak. That's as easily as God with that motion stretched out the heavens and created the entire universe and spoke the stars and the planets into being. "It is he who reduces rulers to nothing, who makes the judges of the earth meaningless. Scarcely I have been planted, and scarcely I have been sown. Scarcely is there has their stock taken root in the earth, but he merely blows on them, and they wither, and the storm carries them away like stubble. To whom then will you liken me, that I should be his equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes," in 26, "on high, and see who has created the stars, and the one who leads forth their hosts by number. He calls them all by name because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power. Not one of them is missing." Now, that's just one small little passage, but the point is that there are, obviously, the Bible, God's Word, is filled with page after page, verse after verse, of truths like this that just declare how gigantic and enormous and powerful and awesome God is. And the suggestion is that the folks back here in Zechariah chapter 7, that they've been saying, "Hey, check out us. We're faithful. We're remembering even some of these other fasting times that commemorate these other things that were not required or prescribed in the law of Moses. And we're, in other words, look at us, we're even going beyond what was required in the on the feast days," but they were not growing in Christ. They were not thinking about God. They were just going through the motions. And as you're thinking about yourself and why you are here today, I hope you would not say, "I'm raising my hand to declare I'm just here biding my time. The only reason I am here is because it keeps other people off my back so they don't call me and ask where you've been. Or the only reason I am here is to make a good impression or give the appearance that I am hanging with the body and that I'm still good spiritually." That's one thing that if I could brag on my mom or God's work in my mom's heart, she never went to church to just kind of show up. She always went to church and was carrying all kinds of bags and different things like many of you do, you know, ready to minister and to be a part of things. Talking to the women of her Sunday school class this last weekend, got to enjoy some of the testimony of all the different projects that they'd been involved in, all the different things they'd made, all the different people they had got together to help, the countless number of dresses and garments they'd made for people who had lost things. And even in her last couple of weeks of her life, one of her students that she had led to Christ back in the Hammond and Gary School District, Mark, had a fire in his apartment, and she knew she wasn't going to be using her bed that she just bought last year, and her furniture, her dressers, you know, all that kind of stuff. So she invited him to come over and take that stuff and you know, just have it, so that he could get some use out of it. But it's that mindset of, hey, we're going to grow, and we're going to continue to keep our focus upon the Lord. We're going to look at Him for who He is, and I trust that is what you're doing here. I read the little illustration of some little things that appeared in a secular college, you know, the little magazine that went off on behalf of the student body, and one person in a local tavern put a little note in there, you know, about his place. It says, feel free to come and invite your parents here and have a nice meal, and we'll act like we don't know you, as if you're not a regular, you know, drinking alcoholic and customer. We'll act like we don't know you. And then the local pastor chaplain got a hold of that and said, hey, you bring your parents here to chapel and we'll act like we do know you, even though you've been missing. But that's not the way, obviously, we want to do things around here. The Israelites had been doing those things. They had been putting on the show. They had been doing things with all the wrong motives. And here they were, after 490 years of dishonoring the Lord and not keeping His command to let the Lord land rest, and 70 years of hard captivity. Now here they were back. And you're asking yourself the question, well, through all this hardship and through all this agony, through all this separation of families being blown apart, has anybody listened and has anybody learned anything yet? And that's the question that comes to me, and that's the question that comes to you. The main thing that we need to get back to is the worship of God, and that comes through our focusing our attention on the attributes of God and just running through in our minds how we can do that. But look, as this chapter unfolds a little bit more, in verse 8 and following, as that question has been laid out there and the people have been found wanting, they're getting some more instruction. If you will return to me, and if you will begin the worship, here's what I have in mind for what a worshiping person looks like. What are they doing? So he says in verse 8 of Zechariah 7, it says, then the word of the Lord came to Zechariah, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts. Now, these are simple things, right? And that's what worshiping people do, is they start with these simple things. Dispense true justice. Practice kindness and compassion, each to his brother. Here's some things that you don't do in verse 10. And do not oppress the widow and the orphan, the stranger or the poor. And do not despise or devise evil in your hearts against one another. But they refused, unfortunately, to do what? To pay attention. And what did they do? They turned a stubborn shoulder and stopped their eyes, or ears rather, from hearing. So we're thinking to ourselves, okay, we've received the initial challenge. I'm here and maybe my worship has been waning, or I'm here and I'm under great pressure and it's just hard in life at this juncture in my life. I think before Christ comes back again, it's going to get more hard for everyone in general as things happen economically in our country. We are not given the free pass anymore, as you already know. The thumb screws are going to be tightened down economically, and we're going to have less to give, less earning power. Well, does that mean because we don't have the earning power that we just fold this place up and say, hasta la vista, baby, we're done here because we don't have any money? No, it means that we get back to worshiping the Lord through doing the very things that Zechariah is suggesting that we do, that you can do for virtually for free. And what does that entail? Think about, for instance, as God is looking into your heart, what He's looking for and what these passages suggest is going on in your heart. For instance, that first one there of dispense true justice. What has to be going on in your minds when you think of justice? You have to understand that there isn't any sliding scale, that God describes what is right and what is wrong, and that he wants us to be committed to not ripping people off, but to helping people out, to giving folks the benefit of the doubt, to not saying, I'm going to be the judge and jury in other people's lives or whatever, but I'm going to let God work out those things. He can be the event, out those things, if 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 those things,